Hey everyone, Brian from All They Ruck Off here, and today's podcast episode is with Kristen, who is a fellow rucker. She's a nutritionist, and in this episode, we get into eating habits, rucking, nutrition, her story, just a lot of good information and tips surrounding food. So I'm really excited about this one. I had a great time talking to her on the phone. She's really nice, and I hope that you enjoy this episode. You're listening to the All Day Ruck Off podcast, episode number 139. Thank you so much for the support and for downloading this episode. I really hope that you enjoy this interview. It was a lot of fun. I think that there's some great info in there. Here's the interview. Today, I'm talking with Kristen Lorenz. I'm really, really excited to have her on the podcast. We're going to be talking about fitness. We're going to be talking about nutrition. We're going to be talking about a ton of awesome topics. And so I can't wait to get into this. Kristen, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. It's a Friday. It's a great day.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you too. So before we get into nutrition, I would just love to hear your experience with rucking with GoRuck and kind of your relationship with that.
Awesome. Firstly, what a great form of activity and teamwork. I was actually exposed to it first by my husband. He exposes me to a lot of really great things. I have to give him a lot of credit for that. So he is a Green Beret and a former cadre with GoRuck. So he told me he started leading these events and I had no idea what he was talking about. And you know, he'd be gone all night, come back in the morning, sleep a couple hours, go leave, do another event. And I started asking more and more questions and learning more about GoRuck, thinking how awesome it is that these people get together in the middle of the night, put themselves through strenuous activity and create these lifelong bonds and prove to themselves how much stronger their bodies are than their minds. So I actually did an event with him. I did a September 11th event in Washington, D.C. And my gosh, it was hard, but it was also wonderful. It's probably one of the proudest moments of my life.
That's awesome. And do you recall how long ago that event was?
Oh, that event was... I always joke saying that it's what got him to propose to me, even though I don't think it really was. He ended up proposing to me about 2 or 3 months after that event. So that would have been in 2015. Nope, 2014. Wow. Oh man, 5 years ago. And yeah, I think I remember too, we went over 23 miles all around DC, all the monuments that night. It was absolutely incredible. And I actually still keep in touch with a bunch of the team members to this day. I feel like I joined a family that day.
Isn't that awesome how that works? There's still a lot of people from my first class that I'm still in contact with. And some of them don't even do events anymore, but we're still in contact.
It is incredible. And my husband doesn't lead events currently. He's been deployed and working on other businesses, but he is in close contact with so many people that he's done events with as well. I just think it's an incredible community that they have, you know, come up with and that's developed over the years. Even if you've done one event and you've met someone in across the country who's done another event, it's like a secret society that you never knew existed until you've done one.
So at the time of your first event, were you two dating?
Yes, we had been dating for a while. I would say probably 5 or 6 years. And I was definitely hoping we would have gotten married at the time. But, you know, one of the best things about Dan is he's very methodical and takes his time and really makes thorough checks. So, again, I still joke with him that completing a GoRuck event, especially one as hard as that one, was one of the final qualifiers to become a good wife.
That's too funny.
He says it's not, but I don't know.
you had been together for a while, so you knew what you were getting yourself into when you signed up for the event. This wasn't like a second date. Hey, let's do this GoRuck thing together.
Correct. Yeah. And physical fitness is something that was always very important to Dan. One of the first gifts he got me years earlier was he had signed me up for the Army 10 miler. And I have him to thank for influencing me a lot in becoming more active. I started CrossFit because he was deployed once and I knew he liked CrossFit so much, so I wanted to start doing it. So when he got back from his deployment, we could have, you know, we could go to CrossFit classes together. So I knew what I was getting into when I signed up for my first GoRuck event, and having signed up for it in advance, knowing how arduous it was, I did train and prepare for the event.
I'm glad he keyed you in on it, because I know that there's, you know, some couples out there where one of the spouses or one of the significant others has done a number of events and they get the other one signed up and they don't really let them know what's going on, and things can head south.
Oh, for sure. And this was back in the day before they had the weighted plates either. So we were duct taping bricks together to make sure I had the right number of pounds in my ruck. And he did a great job not giving me special treatment, but also making sure that I had the ruck and the bricks in a good way and my bladder full of water and Camelback, everything all set.
That's perfect. So you've, you know, completed a GoRuck event, you got engaged a couple months after, which is awesome. Congratulations for that. I mean, this was years ago, so obviously you're married now, but that is very exciting. After that, did you do any other GoRuck events, or did you focus mainly on CrossFit and other fitness endeavors?
Attended a few scavengers with him, and truthfully, shortly after we got married quickly, and then I got pregnant very fast. So I wasn't able to do any full GoRucks after that. And truthfully, I got pregnant very fast, had a baby, got pregnant again very quickly after that. So unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to do very many of those, but I've been very into CrossFit over the years.
So since completing your first event, you've been doing CrossFit. How did you become a nutritionist? And was that, you know, before you started getting involved with this? Was it something that came after? Like, where did that all come along?
I've been a dietitian for almost 13 years. I first became interested in nutrition in high school. I was a member of the crew team in high school, and they would weigh us because they wanted to have a lightweight boat, which in high school, I'm not sure what the regulations are anymore, but in high school, if you weighed 130 pounds or less and you had eight girls, you could have a lightweight boat. Now, mind you, I'm 5'8". So, and in high school, they put me on the scale and it was a little over 130 pounds. And they asked, this is a long time ago, so no hate on anybody, but they asked, do you think you might be able to lose a few pounds to, so we could have a lightweight boat? And I said, yeah, sure, no problem. Well, it was the beginning of the season. So as we're continuing to work more and more, I'm gaining more muscle and I started to gain weight, not lose weight. And they hired a dietitian. I don't remember where she came from. And she was a sports dietitian, and she tried to teach us about healthy foods and how to optimize your body for performance. But fat loss while maintaining athletic performance is tricky. And I wouldn't recommend it for a 16-year-old girl, but it is what happened now. I don't think anybody knew what kind of triggers might have been happening at that time. But I will tell you, that's when I became first introduced to nutrition. I became really interested in it. But I will say as well, I started to become obsessed with the scale because I was chasing this number. This number became an identifier for me, and it became very stressful because what if I didn't make weight? If I didn't make weight, then seven other girls were going to get let down because I couldn't get it under control. I couldn't get it together that week to be under 130 pounds. So began a cycle of unhealthy habits and an obsession with the scale for a little bit, but over time and help with other nutrition professionals and therapy, I was able to get out of that cycle. And that's something that I really like to help people avoid and work against, because you can have a really healthy diet. You can have wonderful athletic performance, improved athletic performance, and you can do it in a moderate way without feeling deprived and without feeling obsessed with the scale.
That just had to have been so tough.
Yeah, you know, it was tough. And it took me a while, Brian, to think, like, what was it that really leveraged me into why I wanted to do this so much? And I've never shared that story, honestly, because I didn't ever want it to get back to my parents, because it's not their fault. And I don't want them to feel blamed for it, because they didn't know. And so, truthfully, you were the first time I've ever told that story in full.
Oh my goodness. There's not much more I can say than that. That's just so tough. It's tough on a, you know, you might not know this or not, but I used to train Muay Thai for a lot of years, and we would always be trying to get, you know, fighters down to a lower weight so they could, you know, cut weight, and they were obsessed with the scale. And it was mm-hmm. tough as adults dealing with that and everything that comes along with it. But I can't even fathom as a 16-year-old, because high school is so difficult as it is without mm-hmm. any additional pressures. And then the whole pressure on top of it, basically saying, if you can't lose this and we have to carry a heavy boat, like, can we please get the light boat? That's just mm-hmm. not that me saying sorry helps anything, but that's tough. That's tough.
It is. It's really hard. And throughout my experience, you know, I've worked with so many men and women over the years too. And body composition is so different for everybody. And I like to ask people why so many times, because sometimes someone will come to me, we call it peeling the onion, but you know, someone will say, okay, well, I want to weigh, you know, I weigh 205 pounds now and I want to weigh 180 pounds. And I say, why? Why? And you ask them why five times in a row, but you peel that onion because you can get a little bit deeper as to why. You know, why? Is it really that number, or is it something different? Because that number, it's just a data point. Now, I do believe in healthy, sustainable weight loss. I do believe in that. But that number is just a data point. So what if you felt confident and could be ripping pull-ups at the gym and you were sleeping great and your sex life was amazing and you weighed 185 pounds? Is everything going to go to crap because you weigh 5 pounds more than what your initial goal weight was? You know, so that number, I don't love people trying to be defined by a number, because I've been there and it sucks.
I think that just gives you a very valid place to come from, because like you said, you have been there, and it's just a different way of looking at it, because a lot of the weight loss goals are, I want to lose this number of pounds, not I want to achieve something. And by achieving that, it might require some, you know, some weight loss. But when you chase a number, once you get to that number, you just, in my experience, you just try and chase a lower number.
You're absolutely right. There's one person, and I give this example all the time, but you know, I ask this person over and over and over again, you know, why? Ultimately, the reason why she wanted to lose weight is because she's got two young kids and she just wants to put on a pair of jean shorts and go to the park with them without feeling self-conscious. She doesn't care about the number on the scale. She cares about feeling confident. That's what we track. That's what we're looking for.
I love it, because I mean, that gets to the root of the reason why they want to get there. Kind of like sometimes, you know, we talk about people's whys for events and whys for doing things. If you can target her why, and you know, maybe she doesn't hit her weight target, but if she gets her confidence, like, that's what matters. That's the goal, and that's what's going to change her life. because you could get to that number and still not have, if you're not building the other things up around it, you're not going to have the confidence. You can hit your perfect goal amount. And if you're, you know, if you're trying to get a certain pace, you can hit your pace. If whatever you're shooting for, if you don't have the right structure around it, the reason for getting there, then hitting that goal, you're going to feel you can feel unfulfilled.
It spot on. I actually had a client this week who is very active in the GoRuck community, who just hit a pace that he's been chasing for years. And it's great. It's such a wonderful, you know, we can talk more in depth about success stories later if you want, but I mean, it's right. These non-scale victories, that's what I like to call them. Because that's what they are, non-scale victories. I can't tell you how many times I've had a client, you know, text me before check-in. I cannot wait to check in with you. You're going to shriek. You're going to be so pumped when you see my check-in. And then I'll read their check-in and it's all glum because they stepped on the scale right before the check-in. So their jackets were fitting, their pants were fitting, they PR'd in the gym, they hit a pace, all of these amazing things. They're feeling great, sleeping great, but the scale didn't reflect how amazing they've been feeling. So the scale, it can be helpful. It can be a data point in certain circumstances. I do still use it for some people, but it's not the end-all be-all. It is not the only measure of anything when it comes to a fitness and nutrition journey.
I think that's such a refreshing way to look at it. And honestly, I haven't talked to too many dietitians in my life, so I don't know if that's a common idea amongst them, but I think it's refreshing to hear.
Good. I'm glad it resonated.
It did. And so, you know, we've talked about these goals that people have, and it's, you know, their real reason for why they want to hit a certain weight or why they're trying to, improve their diet or their nutrition. And so, you know, in my experience, that there's a direct correlation between the types of food I eat, how I eat, and how I take care of myself versus how I perform at GoRuck events and how I feel, you know, in the recovery period afterwards. And so I was wondering if you wouldn't mind, you know, talking about, you know, being a dietitian, how all of that, you know, how you've seen it play in with athletics and sports and rucking.
It is nutrition and sports, rucking, activity, life. It is they're completely enmeshed. And I tell everybody this, I should probably just get it tattooed somewhere or make sure it's maybe something a little less permanent, but it is something I say to everybody, that awareness precedes change. So having an awareness that maybe my performance isn't as good as it could be, that precedes the change of what could I do to modify or influence my what I'm doing to make my performance better. So just having that awareness, keeping track, that can help. But then let's say you're keeping track and say, wow, I ate an apple before I worked out and I did great, versus I ate a peanut butter sandwich and felt sluggish. So you're bringing an awareness to what it is that you're doing. And that's on a very basic level. But, you know, professional sports teams, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but they have registered dietitians for these professional sports teams. You know, the Washington Nationals have one, the Blue Jays have them, the Dolphins have them, you know, and then it's not a very widely publicized job, but it is becoming more and more commonplace for these professional athletes to really tune in their nutrition. And I hopefully it's starting to trickle downhill, because I think about this, where your body is, if you're training, your body's a vehicle. It's a vehicle for a heavy ruck. It's a vehicle for a barbell. It's a vehicle for carrying kids. So what are you using to fuel that vehicle? So food is fun, but it's also fuel.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is that I feel like, at least personally, my relationship with food isn't that it's fuel. It's that it's delicious. And mm-hmm. In the past, and even still now, I like eating things that taste good. And when I say tastes good, I mean I like eating candy. It's delicious. But I always feel worse, you know, fueling up with something like that versus something that might be more healthy. And so I guess like my example on that is Amazon had this really good sale for gummy bears where it was $5 for 6 pounds. And so of course, like any sane individual, I bought 18 pounds of gummy bears. Because who can't pass up a deal like that? And and for 3 months, I was running, you know, I was doing all these drills. I was working out really hard. I wasn't seeing any improvements, you know, really across the board. And my guess is that, and you might be able to answer this, is that my body was working really hard to process 6 pounds of gummy bears a month instead of instead of using that to make me better at things.
Well, so first, important question. What brand were they? Were they Haribo? And this has nothing to do with the nutrition, only because my husband and I actually also love gummy bears.
Were they
the Haribo kind, or were they the kind, the big kind that have a B on the tummy?
They were the Black Forest ones.
Okay, those are great. I mean, again, those just taste delicious. So as a gummy bear connoisseur as well, great choice. As a dietitian, I would have partitioned those out a little bit more. You know, I think all foods fit, but it depends. What are your goals? And how much of those gummy bears are you eating every day? You know, you probably weren't fueling yourself optimally to be making mad gains in the, you know, in the gym and in your performance. But that is, so I do think that there is, you can have really delicious fuel. You know, I don't want anyone to have to feel like a robot, you know, eating their food. But what I really love to do with my clients is to educate them as to, you know, why we would do this. And what I love too is, how are you feeling after that? I have some clients doing a visual food journal that they take a photo of what it is that they're eating, and they talk about, you know, their mood and how they felt before and how they felt after. And that can be a really useful tool to come up with ideas or see trends. Because when you really think about it, you know, changing your nutrition is, you know, think about it as a cost-benefit analysis. Something you said, Brian, that was really poignant is, you know, you like to eat better because it makes you feel good. And humans, we're really primal when it comes to it. We want to do things that feel good. So if you are getting that positive reinforcement from your body feeling good, you're more likely to continue eating that food. You have access to good food, you eat good food. You have access to, you know, again, I don't like saying food, like labeling food as good and bad, but I think you guys know what I'm getting at. You have access to high nutrient food, that's what you're going to eat. You have access to low nutrient food, that's going to be what you eat.
Yeah, I think that the visual calendar is a really, really good idea. You know, especially if someone's curious about their food, because I know that mine would have been a lot of frowny faces overall at the end of the day, because it all tastes delicious, but it, you know, it doesn't make you feel good afterwards. I like that. That's a really good idea.
Well, then I would challenge you individually. If you did still have a bag of six pound bag of gummy bears, how would you feel if you ate, the Black Forest ones are pretty solid size. You know, what if you had 8 of them planned for the end of your day or something, you know, just having a small amount. People are satisfied by less than they think is actually necessary.
And that's an awesome, you know, takeaway as well, because that's the problem with some of these, you know, packages, because you're used to eating a package. Not that I'd eat 6 pounds of gummy bears in one serving, but you don't realize how much you're eating, because it's really hard to make a dent in, you know, one sitting down with a 6 pound bag of gummy bears. Like there's a lot before and there's still a lot after. Like you don't, you know, you don't see the dent, but then partitioning them out, because that's, you know, that's how a lot of that candy reward stuff works, is like, you know, the first one's always the best. And then after that, you're just chasing the taste of that first one again. So really, like a small handful is all you need.
So true. And again, it just comes down to awareness. And this awareness, it's not just a one-time thing. It's something that takes time. Man, it takes time to really judge, what's my hunger level? How full am I? Is this still tasting good? Or am I just eating it and just to eat it? And what's really interesting, watch kids eat. My three-year-old last night, man, he would not stop asking me for ice cream. And typically, I don't like to give in to something that he's asking for a ton, because then he's going to know that's what he's going to get. But anyway, it was a special night last night. He was asking for ice cream. I kid you not, he had 3 bites of ice cream, didn't eat it again for the rest of the night, didn't touch it at all. And probably because that was enough. 3 bites was enough for him.
It's funny that you say that, because I'm thinking about when my kids are asking for things, if I give them a Brian sized portion, they don't finish it. They just eat the amount that they want, and then they're done with it. Whereas if someone gives me something, I'll usually finish it, regardless of if it's a small plate or a big plate.
So much is conditioning too. Again, no shame on our parents or our grandparents, but I have a private Slack channel with all of my clients, and I asked a question the other day, did anyone here grow up with the Clean Plate Club? And are you familiar with what that is?
Oh yeah. I mean, maybe not called the Clean Plate Club, but I've definitely gotten the, they're starving people in China, like finish your food.
Yes, exactly. So that is, in concept, something that, we do so we can, so it's almost in a way, if you do it over and over and over again, it's training kids to eat food when they don't want it or they don't like it or they're not hungry, And so it's, again, there's a fine line, and I know we're not here to talk about pediatric nutrition and anything like that, but it is, it is a conditioning thing. And then as an adult, or at least, sometimes I'll catch myself eating after I'm hungry just because I don't want to clean the plate and put it down the disposal. I mean, come on, Kristen. But so it's true. So it's just, bring that awareness to what it is that you're eating, your satisfaction, how are you feeling, all of that.
Yeah. And I think, a really good takeaway on that is, if you're someone who routinely eats every single thing on your plate, kind of stepping back for a second and thinking, why is that? Is it because you're hungry, or is it because, that's what you're, in quotes, supposed to do? And I mean, one way that I've kind of tried to bake that out of myself, and my wife actually doesn't like this because it bugs the heck out of her, but I'll take like a really small amount of food to start, and then I'll finish it. And if I'm still hungry, I'll get more. And if I'm not, then I won't. And then I'll go up and, sometimes I'll go back and get food 3 times, 2 times, depending on how the day was, but sometimes I don't. And just by giving myself less on each plate, because I was, one of those kids who grew up being told to finish their plate of food, it's kind of helped me get around that. Not attacking the issue head on, I guess, but just kind of a little hack to eat the right amount.
That is awesome. And I'm so sorry, because I'm not going to be able to validate your wife on this. I'm going to back you up. That is a really, really, really great thing to do. So I have to encourage you to keep doing that.
Thank you. It bugs you that I just keep getting up from the table like every 5 minutes. But
oh, and I completely understand too, especially in a house with 2 young kids. You're like, can someone just sit down for like 1 minute?
Right. Yeah. Can we just have this moment, please?
Yeah. Yeah. 100% validate her feelings.
I completely understand where she's coming from.
Yeah.
But it's like sometimes, depending on how your day's been, sometimes I'll do 2 workouts in a day, and I know I'm hungry, but I don't know how hungry I am. And so that's why those 3 trips sometimes happen. But
yeah, that's cool.
But I know if I took that amount every single day, I would finish it regardless. And if that's how much I actually wanted, or if that's, way more than I needed, just because I'm someone who hates wasting food.
Yeah. I hate it too, and having toddlers in the house makes it so hard.
Oh my gosh, you throw so much away.
Oh, I drove by a billboard a year ago, and it was a billboard that said the average American household wastes, I don't know, it was blank number or blank pounds of food a week. And I was like, not if you got kids. Like triple it. Because here's the thing too, like it's so gross too. It's not even salvageable. I was like, I can't even package this and represent it to you again. I mean, it's no.
No, they take one bite of everything, lick stuff, and no one wants it.
I know.
And they're sick half the time. And so you're like, I don't want to throw this away, but I know if I eat it, I'm going to get sick. Like there's no winning here.
It's so true. Yeah.
The struggles of trying to, you know, save food and having kids.
Mm-hmm. It'll get better, I think.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Or they'll move out. Mm-hmm. You know, it's...
One day.
Yep. So I know you don't like to call food, you know, good food or bad food. But if there's, you know, someone who's never really thought about what they ate and they just kind of, you know, grew up eating a certain way, whether that's a, in quotes, nutritional way or not, you know, and they're interested in looking at what they're eating, and possibly, you know, changing up their diet and seeing what works for them. You know, where do people look for, like, where's a good place to look for food advice or to figure out if their diet's working for them?
That is a really great question. And I would say the first thing that you can do to really narrow down the list is get advice from somebody who is credentialed. There are a lot of fitspos out there. But I can tell you this, that having abs doesn't give you the right to give nutrition advice if you haven't gone through the proper training for it. So finding someone who, you know, a registered dietitian is a great first start. We go to school for this. We go to college. We have to do a one-year, you know, internship before we can even sit for a board exam. And you know, take this board exam, we have to do tons of continuing education credits to maintain. We're upheld by a, you know, ethics clause or ethics code. So, you know, registered dietitians are, you know, the experts when it comes to nutrition. But there are a wide range of dietitians, and so many people have a lot of different techniques. So I would also say not any dietitian is going to be the dietitian for you. So I would recommend, and actually I work with some people who are nutrition coaches too, and there are some really great nutrition coaches out there as well. I should say, you know, they don't go through the same training as dietitians, but I am in a mastermind with other people who are nutrition coaches, and they're very well read when it comes to nutrition, psychology, athletic performance, and the such. But so finding someone that you connect with, finding someone who resonates with you, because there are dietitians out there that, you know, that are experts in diabetes. There are dietitians out there who do a non-numbers approach. There are intuitive eating dietitians. You know, what is it that works with you? Think about it as a relationship, you know, that we've dated so many people, and then you find the right person. I don't want you to have to go and invest with a dietitian, you know, five times over to find the right one, but, you know, follow them on Instagram, join their Facebook community, look at them on, you know, check out their website. If that person sparks something in you, if you're like, yeah, this seems like a good connection, that's a great first step into working with somebody one-on-one. And a lot of us give free advice online as well. So how do you know if your diet's working for you though? That's also a great question. You know, it kind of depends on what you mean by work, but I'd say if you're considering reaching out for help, dig a little deeper. Just like when we were talking about the why, you know, why are you thinking of reaching out for help? What are you feeling isn't working for you? And, you know, is it a certain time of day you're feeling a major slump? Well, maybe your lunch is weak. Maybe you need a snack before you work out. maybe you're not drinking enough water. There's so many things. And it's not up, you know, you don't have to be the one that figures that out. That's literally what we're trained for. But a lot of clients come to us with this awareness of like, this is my problem and I've tried to fix it and I can't.
You know, that's really interesting, you know, the way that you described going back quickly to how you can find a dietitian, because, you know, when I was a kid, we had a family doctor. And I didn't really have a choice in my family doctor. That's my doctor. But mm-hmm. as I became an adult, I realized that doctors have profiles out there. Like I read through 50 plus doctor profiles before I chose a doctor to go and see. And that ended up, mm-hmm. that's, you know, the town I used to live in. So I don't see him anymore, but that was like the best doctor I ever went and saw. And we connected so well because of what I read on, you know, on his profile. He was a doctor, but he was also a sports physician, and he was a doctor for a couple of the team out here. And I mean, he was an actual sports doctor. And the way you say finding a dietitian, it makes so much sense because there's so much information out there. Like, don't just go to the dietitian that lives the closest to your house. Do some research, look out there, figure out their personality, figure out if, you know, their goals are the same as what your goals are, because, you know, my guess is if you're trying to fine tune your nutrition and your diet to improve your sports ability or aerobic ability, maybe the dietitian for you wouldn't be someone who's specialized in, you know, getting people in their 60s mobile again. Like maybe that's because I'm sure that's a specialty out there. Just do the research, and that makes a ton of sense. And it never really clicked for me until you said it that way.
Yeah, it's great. And a lot of people are looking for their dietitian to walk the walk and talk the talk that they're looking for. You know, we're not only your team member, but we're also, you know, a leader for you. So, you know, while, you know, I mean, I wouldn't say a criteria for a good dietitian is like, can they clean 185 pounds or something? But at the same time, it's like, well, are you an active person? Are you someone who, you know, who cares and is going to know what I'm talking about when, you know, I said I was trying to do a muscle up, something like that.
Right, right. If you bring up rucking and they say, that sounds stupid, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. They'll be like, well, got to try it.
Yeah, maybe not the right dietitian then.
Correct. Correct.
And so, yeah, I mean, I think we're in a really lucky time because it's not like your dietitian or your doctor or whoever is just the one in town, and we don't have the internet. We've got the internet. We can do more research on people than I think we ever could have before in human history. And so you can check out your dietitian and see if they're into the same things you are, if their goals are the same goals that you have, because at least if they align somewhat in that way, then you know that they'll probably have a better idea of helping you reach yours.
Absolutely. And you'd be surprised too. A lot of people have virtual coaching practices, so you don't even have to be in the same town.
It's amazing, the internet.
I know. Who do we have to thank? Al Gore?
That's awesome. Yes. I have not heard that in a while. Thank you, Al Gore.
I don't know. I know. I just dated myself very badly.
Al Gore, the internet, and Man Bear Pig. Anything we could have ever dreamed of. So we talked about, you know, nutrition, about diet, about, you know, potentially finding a dietitian. We've talked about kind of looking at how you feel throughout the day, and if there's areas in your day that you're feeling sluggish or you're feeling like something's wrong, and ways to kind of look around and figure out what the issue might be. So, you know, one of the things that I've always maybe not had issues with, but I've always been more sensitive to, is whenever I'm trying to change up my eating habits and, you know, I don't want to say like go on a diet, but whenever I'm trying to either cut out sugar or cut out, you know, something that I'm finding isn't benefiting me, you know, the way that impacts, you know, the people around me, my family, because their nutrition goals aren't the same as my nutrition goals. And I don't want to say that they're too far off, but I definitely don't try and, you know, impose everything that I'm trying to do on them. So I'm wondering if you have, you know, tips of ways that people can start trying some changes, making some changes, and having, like, you know, minimal impact on their family.
Yeah, that's great, because I mean, people want to feel supported in their journey as well. So if their family is feeling burdened, you know, it's going to make it difficult for them to succeed or continue. So, you know, some of the small, first, my recommendation would be, though, you know, find a common line within your goals and what your family is gearing towards. So, you know, I'm just trying to come up with ideas, but, you know, let's say you want to lower your cholesterol and your wife wants the kids to eat more vegetables. Well, that's amazing, because, you know, increasing dietary fiber and can be done by increasing vegetables that are made in the house, or, you know, choosing higher fiber carbohydrates and, you know, lower fat cuts of meat potentially. So, you know, trying to find a common line is really helpful. Also, just advocating for yourself. A lot of times, just being clear about your why with your family, you know, people who don't know things, the unknown is scary, and people might just be making assumptions. So if you're just clear about what it is that you want to do and why you're doing it, people are more likely to accept and support you. That being said, also being really moderate with your changes is going to be important, because then it's going to be a lifestyle and not a temporary major flip. So, you know, cutting out sugar versus reducing sugar. And, you know, so things I like to always have people start with is, are you getting enough hydration? And then, you know, adding colors to your meal, maybe focusing on the plate method. You know, it's really going to depend on what the person's goals are. But one thing that is going to be important is, can your dietitian help you navigate those complex relationships and situations in which you, you know, can meet your goals, but meet them with flexibility? You know, how can I go to these company, you know, holiday parties? You know, that was like a big theme last month was, you know, I have all these holiday parties or all these vacations going on. You know, how can I stay the course but still have fun? So that it is kind of when an individualized plan, you know, is helpful, but it is absolutely possible to have, you know, have a life and still meet your goals.
I love it. And I just love that honesty approach, because I feel like, and just this is me personally, you know, looking back on times that I've made dietary changes, the ones that have gone the best have been the ones where I told my wife why I'm doing this. Not I'm cutting out sugar, I'm cutting whatever, but saying, you know, I feel this way throughout the day, and I've been noticing that on days I eat more of whatever, that I feel worse. So in an effort to feel better more often, I'm going to be cutting this out. And that's a lot harder, you know, because your spouse is supposed to be someone who cares about you. We all hope.
Exactly.
It's hard to argue against that versus just saying, you know, I'm cutting this out. And then they go, you know, well, why? Like, that's going to make our... So I'm supposed to cook without whatever now? You know, what's the point?
You're totally right. Yeah, I love mushrooms, but my husband straight up hates them. Oh my, he hates them. Like, he hates them so much. And I thought that he was just being kind of a baby once. And so I tried to chop them up real small into a sauce, and he wouldn't eat it because he could taste it. So then I felt bad. And I don't cook anything with mushrooms anymore unless he's gone or traveling. And that's great though, because what feels better to me is making a meal that he eats and enjoys.
I think that compares really nicely. And then the follow-up on that is, you know, making the minor changes and seeing how they work. Like you mentioned the, you know, no sugar versus low sugar. One of the things, and you can tell me if this is a good idea or a bad idea, you can be honest, but one of the things that I found that worked for me when I was cutting down, you know, to lower sugar, like sometimes on weekends, you know, we like to go and like the kids and I will get a donut, or we'll go and get a cookie, or we'll have, you know, some candy here and there. But what I ended up doing was during the workday, I cut out all snacks. Like when I'm by myself, working, like everything's healthy. And then I saved like my sugar for when I'm with like my kids, or, you know, we're doing something mm-hmm. fun like that, or we're all going to have, you know, a little bit of ice cream together. And I found that that's how I was able to cut down and go into that and kind of hit my lower your sugar intake goal without, like directly impacting my family and being, you know, the one person who's not eating ice cream when we're all like laughing together after dinner, having a small bowl of ice cream.
That is perfect, because you didn't completely eliminate something that you enjoy. When you eliminate something you enjoy, we fixate on it. And it becomes something, you know, it's like, don't push the red button. You know, well, now all I want to do is push the red button. So, you know, you not only did you, so you tightened up during the week, but you have your outlet. You have that fun thing that you enjoy planned. And that's what I like people to do. You know, I had a client this morning who, you know, is going to be home for the weekend and, you know, is saying, you know, well, desserts around my fiance, you know, it can be hard sometimes. And I said, well, plan a night that you're going to have dessert then. You know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, because what happens if you completely eliminate it? It's a, you know, completely off limit thing. And then you have one bite. It's something I call the effets. I'm sure you can elaborate on what the word F means, but like, you know, people get the effets. And they're like, oh, well, I broke one rule. I had one bite. So one bite to one pint, you know, I mean, it's not the same thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's so funny because, you know, we personally sometimes look at goals as like, you know, either hit it or you don't, and not like levels, where mm-hmm. if your goal is, you know, to cut out dessert or limit dessert, it's if it's to cut out dessert completely and you have, you know, a bite with your spouse, you know, you're visiting the in-laws or something and you don't want to be rude, right? Because it's mm-hmm. the in-laws, it's not your parents, and you can't just say, you know, get out of here, whatever. So you have a bite, but if your goal is removed completely, then you've failed your goal. So why not finish the pint and then, or the gallon of ice cream, you know, whatever you bought.
Yeah.
And if you, like you said, it's like, why not have some? And just for that time. And then when you have a small bowl, or you have, you know, your portion, you don't feel like you've lost everything. You don't hit the effort mindset, which I've hit a number of times. I know that game.
Yeah. And it doesn't feel good.
No, it doesn't. It does not at all. So, it doesn't feel good during it, and it doesn't feel good after.
No. And one thing that you also like that, you know, I just want to touch on too, is I think it's really great that you're showing your kids a healthy relationship with food as well. You know, you're their main influencer. And so, you know, these are memories that they're going to remember. I remember having ice cream with my parents, and I think so, parent to parent as well. I think it's really great that they're going to remember you as, you know, fun dad who had ice cream with me, instead of like, why didn't daddy ever have ice cream with me?
I like that. I like that. I think that'll hopefully be their memory too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've spent a lot of time talking about, you know, changes that people can make, you know, ways that you can kind of slip them in, see what works, see what doesn't work, ways to get advice. I would love to hear, because like you mentioned that you've worked with some people who have done GoRock events, some people who rock, you know, what are some examples of impacts that working with you has had on other people's performances, or, you know, their, how they feel in life?
Oh, this is like why I live and breathe. It makes me so happy, you know, doing these check-ins with these hardworking Americans. It's just, it's wonderful. And I, you know, the first client I started working with, not when I started working, but he came to me in November, and we went through that, you know, I call it a calibration month, where I'm kind of getting to know his diet a little bit more. And, you know, he's getting to tracking, showing me what's going on. We've made a few changes to his diet. We do, he's training for an event that's coming up in March. And while the scale hasn't necessarily changed, his clothes feel different. His wife is noticing, you know, when she hugs him that he feels smaller. Other people are noticing body composition changes in him. And just this week, he hit a pace goal that he's been chasing for years. And he not only beat it, but he beat it the day after an ice storm up here in Michigan, and he beat it with considerable time. So I bet if he hadn't rucked those 12 miles, it was for the, he was trying to beat the pace required to do a heavy. So the, I want to like look it up on Instagram right now, but I, anyway, he's doing great. Like, what, talk about a non-scale victory. Body, and what we're doing with him is, you know, we tweaked his fuel on the days that he does ruck longer than 7 miles, because we were noticing, you know, performance dips, and we're focusing a lot on, for those extra long rucks, how can we optimally fuel him during the ruck? What's working best with his system? You know, how is he handling, you know, this sugar to fiber composition? And by sugar, I'm talking about like a fruit bar or an apple or something that's really easily packed in a ruck. So we're still in, you know, a couple months into the journey, but, you know, seeing these non-scale victories are, it's really important, because to change body composition while improving athletic performance, you're gonna have to look at differences beyond the scale. Because, you know, if you're doing just straight fat loss, you know, sometimes people do lose a little muscle. You know, it's gonna be a fine line, and that's why you're doing weekly check-ins with someone is really important, because want to make sure that everything's going okay.
I mean, it just kind of all comes full circle back to, you know, the whole scale number. It's why do you want that?
You know, and I tell everybody that progress isn't always going to be linear. And the key, I'm going to give you the key right here, Brian. The key to success for anything is consistency. And I'm sure you've experienced that. And if you look back at all of the successes you've had in life, it comes down to consistency, you know, in the gym, in rucking, in parenting, in living. You know, it's just, you know, every pace isn't going to be your best. It's not always going to get better. But what is it that you're doing to continually work to improve it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just knowing that and being able to reflect on it, you know, if you do have an off week, it's just critical, because, you know, things happen. Sometimes you have an off week, sometimes you get sick. There's a lot that can go on that can make the things that you are tracking worse. And just being able to look back at where you were before everything, being able to see how you've improved, and know that if you keep doing this, you'll go forward and not let those little speed bumps get in the way. It's important.
Mm-hmm. It absolutely is. And experience is important too. Some people do great with 7 hours of sleep. Some people need closer to 9. How are you going to know that? Time and experience. You know, I like to say fall forward, because, you know, if you're going to fall, we all fall. We all mess up. We all trip up. But if you're falling forward, what that means is you're gaining something from that mistake. So, you know, I'm trying to think of an example. Like, I slept 4 hours last night and I feel terrible. Well, what am I learning? I should sleep more than 4 hours. Or I ate, you know, 1.5 giant sandwiches, and then I worked out and got sick. Well, what did I learn? Do not eat 1.5 sandwiches within an hour of working out. I mean, you're learning something. Those are really gross examples, but like, just, I don't know, the best I could come up with right now.
Yeah. I mean, they definitely illustrate the point. And sometimes it's not even as, well, most of the time it's not that crazy, but I mean, it can be as simple as, we had a bag of Halloween candy in our garage that, you know, was extra candy that we didn't give out. And a couple times when I was going out for a run, I'd pass the bag and they're all like the small pieces, and I would grab one and I'd eat it and I'd go for a run, and everything was fine. I found that if I ate more than one, if I had two or three as I was, you know, like trying to get the collar and the leash on the dog and kind of get everything ready. And then I found myself eating two, and they're just, you know, they're just those small snack size things, but I felt like garbage when I was out there. And it was a drastic change. And I was like, who, you know, why do I feel so bad? And then I couldn't figure it out. And then it happened again. I was like, oh, it's that Halloween candy. One piece is fine.
Yeah.
Two is like, it's going to ruin my ruck or my run.
Fell forward, my friend. That's good.
Yep. And now I don't eat that anymore because I don't want to feel like trash when I'm out there working out. So it's those frowny days into smiley face days.
Yeah. I had one other client too, actually. She came to me as a chronic dieter. She came to me, you know, saying, Kristen, you know, I've dieted for years and I cannot lose like body fat. So one thing we did with her is something called reverse dieting. We could do like an entire podcast on that. But basically, you know, reverse dieting is getting your body used to eating more calories. So then we can safely and effectively put you into a calorie deficit. Because if you come to me eating 1,200 calories, being an active individual, I'm not going to put you in a calorie deficit. I mean, and it's just, I would be remiss. You know, I would have never earned credentials. I could not be an ethically good dietitian. Active people have to eat more. Humans deserve to eat more. So, you know, what you do, you get the body used to eating more food, and then you can cut the calories to facilitate healthy, sustainable weight loss. And so this client we've worked together for a while. She's lost 25 pounds and is eating, in her words, more carbs than she's ever had in her life. So carbs are good. Carbs are our friend. You know, eating carbs doesn't make you gain weight, and they're a really important fuel source. So, you know, diet culture, society has kind of trained people to think, you know, I can't eat carbs, or like getting rid of carbs is going to be what makes me lose weight, when that is not the case.
Not all carbs are created equal.
That is true.
A lot of carbs in vegetables. There's a lot of carbs in gummy bears.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure gummy bears do not equal broccoli.
That is correct. That is correct. But there are room for gummy bears.
There are.
We just want to make sure you have your broccoli as well.
Yes. I love it. That's awesome. I've had a ton of fun talking with you about, you know, all of this, and it's just been so great to hear, you know, the stories, the wins. And I'm curious, because you mentioned that there are some dietitians who do virtual work. Is that something that you do as well?
It is. I have an entirely, so a 100% virtual private practice. I talk to clients every week. I do video phone check-ins and email check-ins. We text, but we actually never see each other in person.
That's really cool that you're able to do that. And to follow on that, we had talked about how if you're looking for a dietitian, that it's the right one for you. So where can people find you to figure out, you know, if they're in search of a dietitian, if you're the right one for them?
You can find me on multiple social platforms. I am on Instagram. My handle is TheLastDietitian. You could also find me on Facebook. I have a free community in Facebook. It's private though, so you have to search for it. And I'm the admin for it. So if you just request to join, I will let you in. That community you search for, it's Nutrition with Kristen Lorenz. And then I have a website. And my website will also lead you to my Instagram and my Facebook. And that is KristenLorenzNutrition.com.
Awesome. And I'll have links to all of those in the show notes. So if anyone wants to find those links, head on over to the show notes. You can click the buttons and you don't have to figure out, you know, rewind a couple seconds and figure it out. So thank you so much again, Kristen, you know, for being on, for talking about all this, for taking all of your time to, you know, share this information with us. I for one truly, truly appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, Brian, thank you so much. And I'm just happy to help you make better Americans even better.
Thank you so much for listening to the All Day Rock Off podcast. This has been episode number 139. If you want links to anything that we talked about during the episode, you can head on over to alldayruckoff.com/139, which is the show notes page. I had a great time talking with Kristen. I want to thank her so much again for coming on, for sharing her story, which I know was very personal. And then just getting into all these details, talking about things that you can do to slowly improve your diet, your habits. I hope that you got some takeaways out of this, because I know I sure did. If you want to support the podcast, you can always leave a review on either Apple Podcasts or on Facebook. Just search for All Day Ruck Off. You can also support the online store, alldayruckoff.com/store, or through Patreon, patreon.com/alldayruckoff. There's a couple extra bonuses for supporting that way, some bonus content, and some bonus podcast episodes. So you can check that out if you would like. In this episode, I want to take a quick minute to say thank you so much to Tim for supporting through Patreon. I really, really appreciate that. And I just want you to know that, man. Thank you. And then, of course, thank you, the listener, for downloading this episode. Truly appreciate that support. And I can't wait to talk to you again next week. As always, don't forget, attitude is everything. Keep yours positive and drink hard, ruck harder.